Memphis is the second largest city in Tennessee, famous for Elvis Presley, Beale Street, and barbecue. It's also a city that is more than 60% black and one that has been at the center of the nation's racial strife. Memphis is where civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated in 1968. A new book looks back at the history of race and politics in Memphis, going all the way back to the early 1900s, when Edward Hull Crump, or Boss Crump, ran the city. He was white, but he successfully courted black voters, and his influence was such that there were even songs written about him. Here's Frank Stokes in 1927 singing "Mr. Crump Don't Like It."
"My Mr. Crump don't like it, ain't gonna have it here. My Mr. Crump don't like it, ain't gonna have it here."
Well, joining us now is Otis Sanford, who's a professor of journalism at the University of Memphis and a columnist at the Commercial Appeal. His book is From Boss Crump to King Willie, How Race Changed Memphis Politics. Professor, welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
And when we hear that song, "Mr. Crump Don't Like It, Ain't Gonna Have It Here," tell us about Boss Crump. Who was he?
Well, that song is exactly accurate. Boss Crump was the undisputed political and just overall boss of Memphis for almost 50 years. He was only mayor a short period of time, a congressman for two terms, but he ran Memphis and Shelby County and a lot of Tennessee politics for most of his adult life. He was just a political figure that there's never been one like him before or after.
And he was kind of the first white mayor in Memphis who realized that he was going to need black voters in order to win.
Absolutely. You know, African Americans were voting in Memphis long before they were in other parts of the South, especially neighboring Mississippi and Arkansas and even over in Alabama. But they were voting here. There was a pretty sizable African American middle class here. He tapped into that, did it well, listened to some concerns of African Americans when nobody else was listening, and it endeared him to the African American community almost all of his political life.
How did he appeal to black voters there? What did he do specifically?
Simple thing. I mean, one thing that I recount in the book, after he got elected, he was first elected in 1909, African Americans wanted their own park. They were not allowed to go to white-owned parks. They did not have a park for themselves except for one that black millionaire Robert Church had made for them down on Beale Street. But no other white leader in town would even listen to or entertain the idea of a black park. Boss Crump did. He thought that they deserved one. And so he made it happen despite the reluctance of all the other black officials, and he created Douglas Park, named after Frederick Douglass, that still exists today.
But as you point out in the book, that park is not exactly the most wonderful location. This African-American park was far out of town, and it was hard to get to.
Oh, no question about it. Not now. It's part of the city because the city expanded. But back in 1914, when it officially opened, yeah, it was so far out you had to take a trolley car, get off the trolley car, get on wagons or walk on foot just to get to the desolate area. But African Americans were nonetheless happy about it, and they supported Boss Crump for the most part the rest of his career.
Now, there's no doubt that he was a segregationist, but you write about whether or not he used the N-word. Was he a racist?
I think there's an argument to be made that he probably was. I say to audiences that he was just a product of his time. I don't think there's any question that he used the N-word more than once. It's been documented, and I documented it in the book, even though his family says he didn't. But he did. But again, he was a product of his time. He held the counsel of prominent African-Americans in town who respected him, supported him, came to him with their concerns, and he addressed those. So, yes, he was a staunch segregationist, never thought that an African-American should hold public office. But, you know, you can make an argument that he was a racist. But in those times, pretty much every white person in this area had racial tendencies.
Well, he died in 1954, and the city didn't elect a black mayor until Willie Harrington was elected in 1991. Why do you think it took so long for that to happen, even after Boss Crump had shown the importance of the black vote in Memphis?
Well, it wasn't for a lack of trying. African-Americans had long wanted a voice in political life in Memphis. They sought it. But there was a lot of strain going on. There was a lot of resistance. You know, Memphis didn't get the attention that Birmingham got or places in Mississippi for racial violence. They kept the violence down in Memphis. But in terms of African-Americans getting into political office, the majority white population that existed in Memphis until 1990, they just were not going to have it. And it was only until 1990 when African-Americans had the legitimate chance, because of the change in population, to elect an African-American mayor.
Why'd they call him King Willie?
Well, during his during his time in office, he was a very dominant guy, strong mayor. That title was conferred on him by a local radio personality who actually used to be a colleague of mine at the Commercial Appeal, a guy by the name of Mike Fleming, just because Dr. Harrington, did not suffer fools, and he fought back, and he controlled the African American vote in this town throughout his long tenure as mayor. And so when Mike Fleming called him King Willie, the moniker stuck.
Now, when we talk about racial politics in Memphis, of course, one of the big events in the history there is the killing of Dr. Martin Luther King. You were 14 when he was killed in your city. What do you remember about that?
I've been a news junkie ever since I was a young boy. And so I paid attention to what was going on. And I watched the news, read the newspapers. I remember that day emphatically. I was in the ninth grade. I lived about 40 miles outside Memphis, but Memphis was my area of influence. I just remember the sadness, the violence, both here and in other parts of the country when that happened, the sheer reluctance of the mayor at that time, a guy by the name of Henry Loeb, who would not give in to the city sanitation workers' demands, even though others were trying to get him to do so. He was backed by the newspaper and the white power structure in town. So I just remember that as being one of the saddest and most dangerous moments in this city's history. And it changed the political trajectory of Memphis, because it was one of two things that caused white flight to the suburbs that changed the voting demographics of Memphis.
And made it more African-American.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. With each census that was taken after 1968, African-Americans continued to gain and gain and gain, and then they became the dominant population in the 1990 census.
What about Memphis's place economically? I mean, as you point out in this book, at certain times in its history, it's been a real economic engine in the region. Today, especially when you compare it to, let's say, Nashville in Tennessee, it's a much poorer city. Do you see Memphis finding its way back to being just a major economic engine?
Well, the only thing I can do is hope so, and I think most Memphians hope so. Yes, we've been overtaken by Nashville in terms of population, although that's metro population. I think that Memphis has suffered a lot because of our racial divide, even though we've had it for most of its existence. And you're right. Memphis was always the center of economic life in the Mid-South, based on cotton back in the early 1900s. But FedEx is still here. AutoZone is here as corporate headquarters. There is an effort to revitalize the city. So, I mean, people are optimistic. But I don't think we're moving as fast as we should be moving. And a lot of that has to do, again, with, I think, racial differences, poor educational opportunities for a lot of citizens, and the poverty that is just really high in Memphis.
One of the things I remember about a trip that I took to Memphis is that I was doing a story about the FedEx facility there, and that the people in Memphis who had to deal with these overnight flights because FedEx flies in all these planes and flies them all out every single night, nobody cared about the noise from the planes because they knew that that was where all the jobs were coming from, that FedEx facility is so important. I just thought that was such a nice thing about Memphis.
Well, that is absolutely true. As a matter of fact, I live down near the airport back in the late 70s, early 80s. And I got rousted every night by the planes, but I certainly wasn't bothered by it. I got used to it because I knew that FedEx is the economic driver of Memphis.
Hmm. So what's your favorite thing about Memphis that you would want people, especially who haven't been to Memphis, to know?
Well, Memphis just has a whole lot of soul, and that's not just related to music or related to food. You mentioned barbecue. Memphis is a friendly town. The weather is nice. The cost of living is really, really good when you compare it to other cities. Yes, we have our problems, but I've lived in four other major cities in my lifetime, and Memphis is no worse than some of them. I just think that Memphis, you know, people are friendly, people are kind. Yes, we have our political and racial differences, but overall, Memphis is a great place to be if you like music, if you like culture, if you like history, and if you like a good barbecue sandwich on a Friday night.
Who doesn't like that? Otis Sanford, a professor of journalism at the University of Memphis. His book is called From Boss Crump to King Willie, How Race Changed Memphis Politics. Professor, thanks so much for joining us.
And thank you for having me.